Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show with Jason Hartman. The economic storm brewing around the world is set to spill into all aspects of our lives. Are you prepared? Where are you going to turn for the critical life skills necessary to survive and prosper? The Holistic Survival Show is your family's insurance for a better life. Jason will teach you to think independently, to understand threats, and how to create the ultimate action plan. Sudden change or worst case scenario, you'll be ready. Welcome to Holistic Survival, your key resource for protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Jason Hartman.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman, where we talk about protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in these uncertain times. We have a great interview for you today, and we will be back with that in less than 60 seconds on the Holistic Survival Show. And by the way, be sure to visit our website at holisticsurvival.com. You can subscribe to our blog, which is totally free, has loads of great information, and there's just a lot of good content for you on the site. So make sure you take advantage of that at holisticsurvival.com. We'll be right back.
Now's your opportunity to get the Financial Freedom Report. The Financial Freedom Report provides financial self-defense in uncertain times, and it's your source for innovative, forward-thinking investment property strategies and advice. Get your newsletter subscription today. You get a digital download and even more. The price, only $197. Go to jasonhartman.com to get yours today.
My pleasure to welcome Gordon Chang to the show. He is the author of Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World, released by Random House back in January of 2006. And let's talk about the scary possibilities that are going on in this region of the world and what maybe we should be thinking and doing about them as a country and a world community. Gordon, welcome. How are you?
Thank you very much. The thing that we really should be worried about is not just the North Korean nuclear program, although that's scary in and of itself, but the links between the North Korean and the Chinese militaries. And we saw this on April 15th at that massive military parade in Pyongyang, where the North Koreans unveiled a new missile, which they designated the KNO-8. Now, that was interesting, of course, but what was even more fascinating was that the KNO-8s were being carried on transporter erector launchers, or TELs, T-E-L. And those were obviously of Chinese design. Because they looked identical to those that China makes. And indeed, afterwards, we have learned a lot about how those erector launchers got from China to North Korea. So essentially, the bottom line is that the Chinese and the North Korean militaries are cooperating very closely. The Chinese are arming the nuclear forces of North Korea. And the KNO-8 is a game changer because it is road mobile, which means that it's hard to find, and it also probably, when it's deployed, and it's not deployed yet, but when the KN-08 is deployed, it will be able to reach Alaska as well as U.S. forces in the Pacific. So this is something we really need to think about because Beijing is one way or another helping the North Koreans target the United States.
And this is just a slap in the face to the United States, China's biggest trading customer, right?
This is more than just a slap in the face. This is a direct threat to the American homeland. And there have been reports that the Obama administration did not raise this with Beijing because it didn't want to embarrass the Chinese, although the State Department did say it was talked about in informal discussions. But we really need to talk to them, not only in private, but in public, because they're proliferating technology that will be used or could be used against the United States. So this is something which is completely unacceptable. And I don't know how we deal with it, though I do have a few proposals. But nonetheless, the important thing is we need to have some very candid and some very tough conversations with the Chinese about this.
You know, Gordon, Obama and his administration have this reputation of being rather wimpy, maybe especially when it comes to foreign policy. Is it founded? Is that a fair assessment?
Well, the Obama administration on some things actually has had better policy than the Bush administration before it. On some other matters, though, it seems to be going backwards. And Korea is a perfect illustration of this. President Obama had a very good policy with regard to the Korean Peninsula, at least in the beginning, and that was to take a backseat to South Korean President Lee Min-bak, who is a hardliner, very skeptical of North Korean intentions, and Washington just didn't play along with trying to appease the North Koreans. That changed, however, in the last few months as the Obama administration tried to reach out to the North Korean regime, and it didn't work out. We had what was the so-called Leap Day deal announced on February 29th, which the North Koreans repudiated 16 days later because there was, as part of the arrangements in the Leap Day deal, a moratorium on missile testing. And on March 16th, they announced that they were going to fire off a long-range rocket, which in effect was a test of a long-range missile. And the Obama administration really didn't do enough to, first of all, prevent it, but also to exact consequences, not only on the North Koreans, but the Chinese as well. So in this one area, Obama policy, which started out quite good, has now turned really to mush. And that's going to be a problem because the North Koreans are starting to show these weapons that will target the U.S. homeland.
So this new Chinese-supplied missile has enough range to get to where?
It's not clear. It's clear that the Chinese supplied the launcher. It's not clear that they have actually supplied the missile, though I think they did because the Chinese sold these launchers and similar missiles as a package to Pakistan. And it's likely that the Chinese have also sold the missile or the missile technology to the North Koreans. This missile, when it's eventually deployed, probably will be able to reach half of Alaska. And with ranges, but with improvements in the missile range, it could even get farther than that.
But not California? I mean, or yes, California?
Not California, but North Korea is developing other missiles, though, that will be able to reach the northern part of the West Coast. So we're talking Washington State, Oregon, top part of California.
What is the tenor of North Korea? I mean, they seem just as defiant and obnoxious as ever since Kim Jong-il's demise. I mean the new leadership, sometimes you when you have the demise of the old one, the new leadership loosens up a little bit, but not the case in North Korea?
Not the case in North Korea. And the reason is that we have Kim Jong-un, who is Kim Jong-il's youngest acknowledged son. Kim Jong-un is not even 30. He didn't have very much in the way of grooming. He's taking over a position which is very sort of risky. It's a one-man regime, but the one-man regime is composed of four elements: the Kim Family Circle, Security Services, Korean Workers' Party, and the Korean People's Army. And these various groups compete among themselves, and it takes somebody who has been around a long time and has a lot of skill to be able to manage this type of coalition government. And so essentially, Kim Jong-un is not prepared to do that. And so at this point, at least, he's a weak ruler. And that's always a very dangerous situation when you have regime elements competing among themselves. So Kim Jong-un, I don't know. Some people say, well, he was educated in the West, and so he should be liberal. We don't really know what Kim Jong-un thinks, but we also know it doesn't matter what he thinks because at least for the first several years, and probably longer than that, he will have to cater to the hardline elements in his regime. And that means we're going to see a North Korea that is even more belligerent than what has been in the past.
And unfortunately, he's so young that this can just go on for decades if they don't collapse before then, right?
Right. I mean, it could take quite a long time. In hardline regimes, it always takes years for new rulers to consolidate their positions. And we're going to see the same thing in China, which is slated to have a leadership transition that is formally to begin at the end of this year. Even if it goes smoothly, which is pretty unlikely given what's occurred since February in China, it'll take the new leader at least a couple of years to be able to get his people into place and to be able to then start functioning effectively. In Kim Jong-un's case, it's so much more difficult because the regime is less institutionalized. and also because it's a much more barbaric and tougher regime to manage. And so we're going to see an unstable North Korea for at least a half decade, maybe longer than that. And essentially, it's going to be a question of who consolidates power first. So there's great competition right now at the top of the North Korean leadership. And this doesn't bode well for the North's relationships with South Korea, the region, or with us.
I'm curious. I've watched a couple of documentaries about North Korea, and I can't remember the name, but I watched the one about the mass games, and this country is fascinating to me. Number one, I have this sort of morbid fascination with communism. I don't know why I'm such a capitalist, but it's just interesting. You know, when I visited Cuba, and I've been to Russia. Unfortunately, I didn't go to Russia or East Berlin, but before they opened up, I would have really been fascinated by that. But I have been to Cuba, and would frankly love to go to North Korea if I felt I could do so safely in return. But what do the people think there? Are they just completely brainwashed? You know, when I watched this documentary about the mass games, it seemed like the people were just totally brainwashed. You know, there are supreme leader Kim Jong-il, and they don't know what they don't know, and they don't realize how scarce their life is and how they're lacking so many things. And then I watched another documentary that you may have also seen about the American soldier who defected to North Korea. Can't remember his name, but a U.S. Army soldier, I believe he was in the Army, and he just walked across the border into North Korea, and they interviewed him and talked about his life there for so many years. Fascinating, fascinating stuff.
Yeah, well, in the early years of North Korea, under Kim Il-sung, the founder, people actually were brainwashed, and people believed the propaganda. They believed that Kim Il-sung was essentially a demigod. But that monopoly on information has broken down. And so now people are starting to see prosperity in South Korea. They're starting to see glimpses of the outside world. And this is because video cassettes and thumbnail drives are circulating around North Korea.
Oh, they're getting smuggled in, huh? They're getting into the country.
They're getting smuggled in. And also in the northern part of North Korea, the Chinese cell phone networks operate. So North Koreans can speak to their relatives in South Korea if they happen to physically be along the border. And that certainly also has opened up North Korea. And as well as there's been some limited contact with foreigners who have set up businesses. So, you know, essentially the North Korean people have a much better idea of what's going on.
How do they even get a hold of a cell phone or a computer where they can insert a thumb drive? And it just seems like there's so much scarcity there. Like, I can't imagine people would have the money to have a computer, a cell phone. I suppose it varies. Government-owned businesses, they have computers. But it would be sort of surprising that they would even get access to devices to use this information.
There are a lot of ways they get this. And part of it is because the regime has really been very corrupt at its bottom. So a little bit of money can buy a lot. And although, of course, it is the most hermetically sealed government on earth, essentially people are able to come across the border with China because it is lightly patrolled, or at least it has been up until the last year or so. And that means that there's a lot of commerce with North Korea and China, which is unofficial. And so North Koreans go into China, they trade, they buy up all sorts of things, and they bring them back into North Korea. Also got to remember, during the Great Famine in the middle of the 1990s, essentially government broke down. And there was no government in large portions of North Korea, which meant that basically North Korea, or at least portions of it, were the freest society on earth. And so a lot of goods from the outside came into North Korea, despite the very severe economic conditions and despite the famine that killed at least hundreds of thousands of people. So, you know, in these communist societies, there's always a lot of money slogging around someplace, especially in big cities. And so this sort of leaks through society. And at this point, because the border with China still is pretty open, you have all sorts of folks who go into North Korea, try to proselytize them, try to make them Christians, human rights activists. All sorts of folks have been floating around the countryside in North Korea, and with them they bring openness. And the last thing is, because North Korea has needed aid, it has also meant that Western food aid monitors have gone into North Korea Foreign doctors have gone into North Korea. And that has sort of opened up the people's eyes, because for the first times in their lives, they're seeing foreigners, being able to talk to them. And so there's this contact, which the regime doesn't like, but which isn't a, the regime is not able to prevent it.
So there is some sign of some opening up, some discontent, and possibly would that lead to a coup or a revolution?
I don't know if it'll lead to a coup. Kim Jong-un has continuing his father's policy of Songong, which is military first. And on April 15th, when Kim Jong-un gave his speech to the North Korean people, he said that his policy was not just military first, it was military first, second, and third. So the military probably sees that its future is tied to Kim Jong-un, who gives them some legitimacy because he's a direct descendant of Kim Il-sung. But there are other elements, of course, in society that are competitors to the military. And, of course, in the military, it's not a solid block. You have always have ambitious colonels. The thing about North Korea that gives the regime stability, though, is that people are so poor that they don't really have the means to resist. And so essentially you've got a society where people may be extremely unhappy, and many of them are, but they are not thinking about trying to take down their government. They're much more concerned about where their next meal is coming from. So you contrast this with China, which is by far a much more prosperous society, but you've got a much more defiant population in China, because people in China have gotten over that issue of where is my next food coming from, where's my next meal coming from. They're thinking about the bigger issues of wanting more say in their lives and being irritated by their government. So it is a very different society in North Korea.
Sure. So they're higher on the pyramid of Maslow's hierarchy, so they can start to think about other things beyond basic survival, which is good. In your other book entitled The Coming Collapse of China, Gordon, talk to us a little bit about that. I mean, that was published about 11 years ago, I believe, right?
Right. And I said in 2001, in the middle of 2001, that it would take about a decade for the Communist Party to fall. So I'm about 6 months out of time. But what we're seeing right now, though, is very interesting developments in China, because we have an economy which is stumbling. The Communist Party is fracturing. The authority of the central government is eroding. The military is breaking free of civilian control. And while all of this is happening, the Chinese people are taking to the streets hundreds of thousands of times a year, and often in violent protest. And so you have a society which is very volatile, and Communist Party leaders right now are quite insecure because their political system is fragile, and they know it.
You know, I don't hear much about these riots in China, though. Are they pretty suppressed?
Well,
they're not in the mainstream media that I've seen.
Yeah, the last year for which we have figures is 2010, and a semi-official figure was that there was 180,000 large protests in China, though other people say that there were 280,000 protests. We're talking about a large number of disturbances, and this is a supposedly authoritarian state, but clearly the Chinese people are unhappy with many things in their society, and this is really what happens when you have a prosperous authoritarian state. People start to question the government. This is especially a problem because in the last couple of months, there's been only growth of maybe 1% or 2%. In April, there was probably no growth, maybe even a contraction. In May, the last month for which we have statistics, growth was 2%, 3% at most. And 3% growth is okay if you've always had 3% growth. But this is a society which had double-digit growth in 2010 of 10.4% officially. This is a society that had growth of 9.2%, according to official statistics, last year. So we're dealing with a sudden deceleration of the Chinese economy. And if we want to know what the political effect of that will be, all we have to do is look at Suharto's Indonesia, where you have an authoritarian rule, prosperity for decades, and all of a sudden growth collapses, and then soon the political system is gone. That's the story that China has to face right now.
How much growth does China need to sort of break even? I mean, their demands for GDP growth are much higher than U.S. demands, right? I mean, because of the
yes.
population and because of so much immigration from rural areas. I mean, is that still happening in China? I know when the financial crisis hit over here, which is obviously really a world crisis, I remember seeing news reports and amazing videos about people leaving the cities and going back to the rural areas. I mean, that was shocking to me. But what kind of growth rate do they need? What kind of number do they need to achieve? And of course, these are official numbers. And I'm sure just like in the U.S., they're maligned and, you know, are very debatable, but we've got to sort of put a number somewhere.
People say that China needs about 8% growth. It might need 7.5, 6. That number is going to come down, though, because the workforce is going to start to shrink sometime starting between either 2013 or 2016, probably in the front end of the range because demographic trends in China are accelerating. But China needs a fair amount of growth because it is in the early stages of development. And so you'd expect to see pretty high growth rates. And, you know, zero growth, 1% growth, even 3% growth isn't going to do it for China. And the problem is that they were not able to change the basis of their economy from away from investment and exports and towards domestic consumption. They didn't do that in the really good times of 5 years ago when everyone was telling them that that was job one for them. And they're certainly not going to do it now in a declining, deteriorating economic environment. China right now is in a problem because you don't have the world taking Chinese exports to the same extent. And that is going to be an issue for China because they don't have the domestic consumption to support themselves.
Wow. I guess the big question, and maybe this is kind of the wrapping things up kind of discussion, what is the outlook for China and North Korea, you know, in terms of their perspective, and then what the U.S. should do about it, how the U.S. should react?
Yeah, I think the outlook here is two things two developments are going that are very dangerous. One of them is that not only do we have leadership transitions in both North Korea and China, going from one set of rulers to the next, but we also have changes in the nature of their regimes. And essentially what's occurring is that the militaries in both of these countries are becoming much more powerful, and that means that anything can happen. China has become much more assertive and even hostile, which is the reason why countries in the region are looking to the United States for leadership, because they are concerned about China's trajectory. So we have an increasingly assertive China backing a much more belligerent North Korea, and that means all of us are at risk.
And what should we do about it?
We need to be much more resolute. We need to stop looking at China as a solution for North Korea, because we always look to Chinese leaders to rein in their North Korean allies. The problem is that the Chinese leaders seem to be enabling the North Koreans rather than trying to contain them. And basically, the United States needs to have a new policy of trying to work with its friends in the region instead of working with North Korea's best friend, which is China.
Scary stuff. I mean, do you think, how close do you think North Korea is to a nuclear weapon?
Well, they've already got one. They detonated one in 2006. They detonated one in 2009.
Well, I guess I should have said a nuclear missile, sorry, because I know they had that missile launch a couple of months ago, which was a failure, not a weapon, but a delivery system for it.
Yeah. In 1998, they launched their Taipodong missile, which basically made it all the way to Alaska before it broke up in the transition from the second to the third stage. Their most successful missile test, long-range missile test, was their first. And the tests that they had in 2006 and 2009 were not nearly as successful. The North Koreans can make bold, substantial progress very quickly. And remember, in last year, then Defense Secretary Robert Gates said that within 5 years, the North Koreans would have a long-range missile that would be able to reach the continental United States. And he didn't say it, but what he was thinking was that missile would be able to carry a nuclear warhead.
Wow. Yeah, we've got to make sure that doesn't happen, huh? I mean, if they have that, are they just going to, do you think they'll just use it as a way to incite a war? They know that would lead to certain mad, mutually assured destruction. Well, not mutually, but it would lead to their destruction for sure. I mean, what would they do if they had the complete capability to deliver a nuclear missile to a major American city, for example, what would they do? Would they use it?
Well, I think the thing that they would do is what they've been doing up to now, which is selling their ballistic missile and nuclear technology to the Iranians. And this is why this is so important
and
to
what
us.
Would they
North
do?
Korea. That's another good question.
Yeah.
certainly use it to threaten their neighborhood to try to get concessions, which is what the North Koreans would do. They might also use it, and the North Koreans could use it. But we don't know whether they'd actually do with their weapons, but we do know that they'll sell them. And this is a problem because it's very difficult to contain these very dangerous technologies when the North Koreans, backed by China, are selling this stuff around the world.
Boy, scary stuff. Well, Gordon Chang, thank you so much for joining us today. Your books are The Coming Collapse of China and Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World. Give out your website, if you would.
It's www.gordonchang.com, and my Twitter handle is Gordon G. Chang.
Lots of interesting articles there. Gordon Chang, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
What's great about the shows you'll find on jasonhartman.com is that if you want to learn how to finance your next big real estate deal, there's a show for that. If you want to learn more about food storage and the best way to keep those onions from smelling up everything else, there's a show for that. If you honestly want to know more about business ethics, there's a show for that. And if you just want to get away from it all and need to know something about world travel, there's even a show for that. Yep, there's a show for just about anything. Only from jasonhartman.com. Or type in Jason Hartman in the iTunes store.
Thank you for joining us today for the Holistic Survival Show, protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Be sure to listen to our Creating Wealth Show, which focuses on exploiting the financial and wealth creation opportunities in today's economy. Learn more at www.jasonhartman.com or search Jason Hartman on iTunes. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, offering very general guidelines and information. Opinions of guests are their own, and none of the content should be considered individual advice. If you require personalized advice, please consult an appropriate professional. Information deemed reliable, but not guaranteed.